a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
We have a couple new pages. Before you guys get too busy, would you come up to the microphone and introduce yourself? Tell us where you're from.
My name is Mackenzie Foss. I'm from Milbank, South Dakota.
My name is Courtney Chastain, and I'm from Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Welcome. Glad to have you. Just a reminder, turn off your cell phones or put them on vibrate and whatever, and just so we don't hear that little annoying song that you are so fond of. And I would ask the secretary to call the roll. Vanneman's excused.
Elliott.
Here.
Hager.
Here.
Hunt. Jones.
Say here, Roger.
Here.
Killer.
Here.
Lucas.
Here.
Miller.
Here.
Perry.
Here.
Schaefer.
Here.
Strickers.
Here.
Tolson.
Here.
Vanneman. Venner. Sly.
Here.
And Bruner.
Here. Thank you. Quorum is present. I think Representative Vanneman will be gone all week. and do we have minutes from the previous?
Yes.
Somewhere? I don't, but they must be somewhere.
I move approval.
Motion by Sly, second by Hunt. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Oh, there we are. Minutes are approved. I'd remind everybody that wishes to testify today to sign in at the podium by the door, and so we can have your name spelled correctly for the minutes and so on. And if you have handouts, to give them to the pages. And beyond that, we'll get started with our agenda today. We have three bills. I understand that there might be some corrections needed and coming beyond the amendments that we already have with House Bill 1005, so we may just push that down and take it up another day. With that, let's go into House Bill 1006. An act to revise certain outdated and obsolete provisions regarding the Department of Education. This is a department bill, pre-filed. So with that, are there proponents to House Bill 1006?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. And I'm going to hand out, if the pages can help me here, are they here? Okay. To just walk you through this, we thought I'd be here. I'll give you
is your microphone on, Melanie?
Yeah, it should be. I'll make sure I'll talk into it.
Okay.
We're going to help you along with the bill because there's quite a lot of significant, not significant, but a lot of changes so that you understand. So when I'm talking through, you can be looking at our notes as well. We thought that might be easier than just trying to, then you have to ask questions and we'll refer back to that. So as you know, along with other agencies across state government, we were charged with looking at statutes and rules under red tape review to determine anything that was outdated, needed to be changed, reduced, and extra burden on school districts, et cetera. And so we spent a couple months in internally reviewing statutes and administrative rules, and then took this out to the field and asked them in addition any things that they saw that we should be addressing and looking through. So I have Tammy Darnall with me here, as there are a number of these that are fiscal, date-wise, that are data-driven, and so we're going to walk through them with you as we go through that. What you do need to know is that this is significantly reduced from what we started with. So, you know, we went through and we had, and I think, again, next year we're going to do this again, and we went through every statute and every rule thoroughly and just want to make sure that we, you know, there's what happens is that sometimes when you undo one thing, it touches something else, and so we'll make sure that we really do our due diligence. So this has been a couple months, and so what you see today is a reduction of what we originally intended to do, and I bet you'll see us again next year with a number of these. So I think the best way for us to proceed is if you have the bill in front of you. I'm going to go section by section with the notes that you were given, and then we'll address each one. And, Mr. Chairman, would you like me to stop after each section for questions? Would that be easier instead of going through the entire bill? And I don't know what you would prefer.
I don't particularly like asking questions in the middle, but I know this is...
Just because it's... Then we'd have to go back.
Just because of the nature of the bill, let's maybe do that.
Okay, if that's okay.
I assume there probably won't be any opponents to and rebuttal, so we'll...
Well,
maybe there will. I don't know. You never know. But we'll... Yeah, let's go through it that way. I mean, it'll be more like a classroom today than
a
committee.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Section 1, you'll notice that we have amended and also struck over some of the verbiage within 13.348. What this statute does is it requires the secretary to submit content standards to the Board of Education for approval, but these were very specific previously. So it had the very specific standards, and it's not comprehensive. So there is another statute. It's duplicative of 13.33.1, and if you needed me to read that to you, I have it available if you want me to reference that. So it also requires course guidelines, and so what we're trying to do is to put into place a standards revision cycle, number one, and then secondly, so that it's more inclusive of any standards and doesn't exclude. So you'll see that previously it was language arts, math, social science, and science. We have standards for every content area in which our K-12 system is built on. So I would stop at that point and see if you have any questions on the standards statute.
I just need a little bit of clarification here on this section. Is this pertinent to the Common Core standards? Is this what you're trying to do, set into place to set that up?
Mr. Chairman, no. It really has nothing. I mean, the Common Core standards are one set of standards, but what it allows us to do is that we have a standards revision cycle, like for PE and art and all these others. It doesn't have anything to really do with the Common Core standards at all. It's just that it didn't include all of the standards that we currently have in place that are currently there. So it was just a matter that we went back and saw that at one time, I think that the only thing that districts had in place for content standards were those four core areas, and now we've expanded that, so we have them for technology for all the different areas. We want to make sure that we have that authority, which is given to us in 13.33.1, where it says all public school districts in the state will provide instruction in substantial conformity to accreditation standards adopted by the Board of Education. So we're just trying to align the two statutes.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Dr. Schaap.
Yes.
Thank you. Could you just give one example of a standard, just like one simple example of a standard, and I think that'll clear a lot of things up.
Mr. Chairman, it could be something to the effect that, take fourth grade, by the end of fourth grade, and then, you know, it has all these different standards, the students shall know how to use fractions to identify different parts of, you know, and be able to add, be able to multiply, very specific knowledge that they need to know. What do I need to know by the end of fourth grade? By the end of third grade, you know, they'll be able to know what compound words are and be able to use them in a sentence appropriately.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Section 2. And I might have Tammy speak to this as well. The language in the statute doesn't align with the language we have currently in Rule in 24.17.0302 relating to the submission of student data. Though that changed as a result of some rules that we currently had for the submission of that data, which was the October 15th of each year for any of the data that's very specific to the financial records, PRF, et cetera. And so we needed to align our current administrative rule to the statutory language that we have in place. Aligned statute to rule, excuse me. Went backwards there. Any questions on that?
I think we're good.
Okay, Section number 3. You will see that, again, we've struck language and then also amended this statute in 13.5.14. And this is specific to, again, The language for the official school census, that language is out of date. So instead of talking about school census, we are adding the language in for fall submission of student enrollment data. It's a more accurate description of how the majority of children would be determined. So it really is a cleanup language of verbiage that we no longer use within the Department of Education.
Question, Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Dr. Shupp, what is ARSD?
Those are the administrative rules of South Dakota.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Section 4, we are amending 13-5-17. And in Section 5, Section 4, excuse me, this refers to recording boundaries in a book. And now we're doing that recording electronically, so it's a matter of just getting with the 21st century is what we're trying to do in this statute. So it reflects current practice. Any questions?
I think we're good.
Section 5 is amending this, and you'll see that throughout Section 5, it's 1, 2, and 3. Section 5 is very specific to whether school districts are able to offer a secondary program. It conflicts with 13-5-1, which defines a school district as operating not less than a 13-year program. So this was old language again, and you'll see that we are aligning two statutes, 13-5-1, which if you need me to read that to you, I can do that as well. And so we're amending that statute to align to that. So any questions on that? Okay, thank you.
Yes, Representative Tolson.
13-year would be like a K through 12.
K through 12.
And anything before that, anything other than K through 12, like when they have pre-K, nothing to do with.
No.
Thank you.
No. Every school district is required to have a 13-year program, and that's it. Section 6 is amended 13-6-59, is again uses the term school census, which was out of date. Again, referring to the terminology that we use within the Department of Ed. Section 7 amends 13-37. This statute contains incorrect citation for impact aid, and if you have specific questions on impact aid, I am going to refer to Tammy, and she can give you some better explanation of that. In fact, I think, did we include that? No, we did not. That's the next one. So I don't know if you want some clarification on what impact aid is. Some of you might need to understand better what that is. So why don't we have her explain that? And it'll also help us in the next bill we're going to bring
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Tammy Darnell with the Department of Education. And the Impact Aid Program is money from the federal government that school districts, counties, cities, states receive in lieu of property taxes that they have lost because the property is owned by the federal government. Think reservations, the Air Force Base, federal parks, stuff like that. So the school districts, since they're not able to collect tax revenue on those, they receive the impact aid payments from the federal government. And South Dakota is one of the largest receiving states for impact aid dollars just because of our large federal land base. And so, like Dr. Schaaf said, in the statute, it's just an incorrect reference. A lot of times you see in federal government regulations, the statutes changes, and we forget to update it in our state statutes.
Okay, thank you. Section 8 is, again, we're amending 13-39. It required us to distribute copies of portions of foundation funds, and instead it's now done electronically. So, again, just updating that to reflect our current practice. Section 9 you'll find on page 5. In Section 9, we're amending 13-16-2. This statute, again, references trust or agency funds. The terms are outdated. And the Department of Legislative Audit recommended removing all identified funds and updating the language to be placed in funds identified by 4-4-4. So you will see as you go through this in the next sections, that is specific to that recommendation. And Tammy can address that specifically if you have any questions. So that will take us through, look at what pages here we go through. That would take us through pages 6 and 7. Takes us through the next few pages and updating that language. So questions on that as you're looking through that?
Any questions? Seeing none, go ahead.
Okay. Right, we have some outdated, long overdue changes in the next couple sections. So in sections, let me go back to section 14. I want to make sure I hit that one before we go on. Section 14, and you're going to find section 14 on page 7. So right in the middle of page 7 is section 14. This amendment in 1316-26 and 1316-26.3, they're ambiguous and they need clarity to allow transfers within 12 months of the effective date of reorganization. So you'll look at it, it seems like a simple fix, and yet we found that we were having issues with that ambiguous date. So we very specifically clarified it's when the effective date of the consolidation is, not for just 1 year after that. So it was being based on, is it the fiscal year or the calendar year? And so it's the effective date of the consolidation itself. An overdue clarification we needed at that point in time. So questions on that one?
No questions? Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I apologize. I wonder if I could just go back to Section 9 here a minute. I'm not exactly sure, and I haven't pulled up the reference, but 13-6, I'm not sure what subject is referred to in that chapter, but my question is, we're striking out all the general funds, capital outlay funds, pension funds, and so on and so forth, and just putting them into funds as such. Could you give me a little more explanation as to what we're doing here? And maybe this is a special school district or something that I'm not familiar with, but if you could comment on that.
I'm sure, absolutely. Again, Tammy Darnell, Department of Education. And basically what we're doing is instead of having a statute that lays out these funds, the school districts will still have these funds, except for the trust or agency funds. But then we're just referencing 4-4-4 that basically says government accounting systems are to compose with the generally accepted accounting principles. Any accounting system used by any state agency or any component unit of state government, which would be the school districts, shall be designed to meet the financial accounting and reporting requirements of the generally accepted accounting principles. So they'll still have those funds. We're just, the trust or agency funds are outdated. That's not needed language anymore. And that will go back to when we repeal in the next section where we have the repealers, where we're repealing the impact aid fund. And just say that the school districts have to have the funds as set up by generally accepted accounting principles. So they'll still have those funds. We just don't need to name them in statute if we're telling them they have to comply with those principles.
Follow up, Mr.
Sure.
If I could just take a step further. So then they could create other funds so long as they're just being accounted for in accordance with 4-4-4. I mean, they could say Happy Day Fund, as long as something in statute requires that Happy Day Fund basically to be in strict accord with the accounting practices of 4-4-4. Is that all we're saying here?
Yeah, I guess in a simplified term, yes, they can. But somehow that fund will have to be I'm going back to the state accounting system because I'm a lot more familiar with that. We have in our state accounting system, we have other funds. You guys are full. But within other funds, we have many other funds that make that up. So school districts will still have their general fund. They'll still have their capital outlay fund. But I think what you're referring to, that Happy Day Fund, would be like a sub fund or a component fund of one of those.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yeah, Representative Lucas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is some of this really resulting from what we did last year where we repealed the requirement that schools can keep as much money in their funds. They're not limited to the limitation where we are at 30% at one time or 25%?
Indirectly, yes, because we no longer have that requirement. That was the big one for the impact aid fund because the school districts never knew for sure when they're getting that revenue in and stuff. So they could get a payment from the federal government on June 28th, and all of a sudden, if that statute was still in place and they had they deposit into the general fund, it could bump that fund way up. So indirectly, yes, it is.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Thank you. Let's go back then to page 7. Beginning in section 15 and then through sections 34. This amends 20 statutes that are very specific to vocational and technical education, which itself is a term that we no longer use. So we're updating terminology and we're updating language, and I will go through different sections to make sure that you don't have any specific questions on those. So the section replaces terms like vocational education, adult vocational education, with career and technical education, and then adds the definition of career clusters, which I'll talk about in a minute. The use of the term vocational institutions is also updated to post-secondary technical institutes. And then we have clearly defined the term director, and that's referenced in subsequent statutes but was never defined previously. So we wanted to make sure that that was defined as well. So we'll just start through Section 15. Again, you will see that we defined in Section 15, 13-39-1.2, to define what career and technical education is. And it's defined, and I just want to, I'll just read this to you, and I usually don't like to read it, but I just want to make sure that it's understood what we're trying to accomplish here. A contextual education model that employs career clusters, programs of study, and preparing highly skilled students for success in post-secondary education and in-demand careers. There are a couple things that we've implemented that are really systemic throughout the school districts, and one of them is the career clusters. There's 16 career clusters that identifies areas in which students would have interests and then different occupational opportunities within those clusters. So that terminology you're going to see later that we've defined clearly. And then secondly, the programs of study. And programs of study take the career cluster for students interested in the medical field and they want to very specifically become an EMT. A program of study is created for that student so they know which courses would be appropriate for them to take throughout their high school career to best prepare them for post-secondary education. So then in the next, number 2, we have defined what career clusters are. And because we're using that term broadly throughout the K-12 system, in particular in our high schools, the career clusters are a distinct grouping of occupation and industries based on knowledge and the skills they require. So those really set the framework for much of the work that we're doing right now in career and technical education. Number 5, wanted to direct you on page number 8, a new definition for the director. You'll see that throughout the statute, the director was referenced and was never actually defined previously. So it's the person at the Department of Education responsible for administering career and technical education. Go down to the bottom of page 8, please, line 24. You will see that we struck the verbiage specific to vocational education and that terminology is no longer used within the Department of Ed. So I'll stop on section 15 before I go on to 16 and see if you have any questions.
Any questions? Don't see any.
Okay. Section 16, and I think you're going to see throughout, and I'll stop if necessary, but section 16, again, we're adding in and updating the language from vocational to career and technical. Same thing as within 13-39-9, updating from vocational to career and technical, adding in the word instead of him, the director. You will see that previously they obviously assumed that the director of career and technical education would be a male, and so we did make it generic within. It actually could be a female. Section 18. We're amending 13-39-12, again, updating the language from vocational to career and technical education. Section 19, 13-39-13 is the same, updating from vocational to career and technical. And then instead of rules adopted, the current terminology that is used by when we, instead of adopting rules by the Board of Education, we promulgate rules. So we made that a current to current practice as well. Section 20, 13-39-19. Again, we are, the secretary may distribute funds appropriated to him instead of him to the department. And so that's updating that language, and you'll see throughout that section and also throughout that statute that we are updating everything from vocational to career and technical. That takes us down to the middle of page 10 to section 21, where we're amending 13-39-21. Once again, we're updating vocational to career and technical education. Section 22, amending 13-39-26, and updating that language, changing it from private business or private vocational institutions to non-public secondary or post-secondary technical institutions. And instead of contracts, we have signed agreements and career and technical education. So I'll stop on that section to make sure that there might not be any questions on Section 22.
Any questions? Don't see any.
Okay. Section 23 is, again, the amendment of the language specific to vocational. And, again, we've added in the new terminology on line 2 on page 11 to add in the verbiage of career and technical education and programs by career clusters to make it more current. Section 24, again, is just the amendment to 1339-29 to career and technical education. And the same is true in Section 25 on 1339-35.1. Okay, Section 26, promulgation of rules. And so you'll see that if it goes through all the way through page 12 is, again, one edition of the career and technical education. Section 27 for 1339-38. Again, the two common changes you see through all these, we're using the word promulgated instead of adopted, career and technical instead of vocational. The same is true in Section 28 and 1339-41 is amended. Section 29, 1339-56, same practice, career and technical education and promulgated. Section 30 on page 13, again, just added in verbiage of a cleanup on that language and amending vocational to career and technical education in 1339-57. Section 31 is, again, a cleanup of the language. That takes you to the top of page 14. And this is very specific to the post-secondary technical institutes. So instead of vocational education, we're now referring to the technical institutes. And then, again, is references to a fund rather than deposit therein, because it goes to a fund and doesn't deposit to the institute itself. I'm going to stop there. It looks like we have a question.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Could I ask a question relative to material at the bottom of page 12?
Yes.
This rule has given authority for rulemaking authority to the Board of Education. And I notice at the bottom of 12, line 21, it says you're given authority for the duplication of programs. In other words, you're given the rulemaking authority for the duplication of programs. Why would we want to have duplication of programs?
It's within the room. You know what, Mr. Chairman, excuse me, Representative Hunt, I believe what they're speaking to, they may provide rules that would prevent the duplication of programs. So I see what you're saying. It's almost like there's rulemaking authority for duplication, but I believe what the intent of that is, very clearly within the post-secondary institutes, is that they are not duplicative of programs when that's in place. So that's been something that's been in place there, but well, I believe that that's what the intention was, is that there's not a duplication of programs.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I recognize that, but if you go up to number one, if you apply that logic, you've got a different meaning to curriculum.
It is.
So I think what you really need to do is probably, maybe we can do it here.
Sure.
We can.
Put the word prevent.
Prevent.
In there, and then I think
makes sense.
All on the same wavelength. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, if that's good,
yeah.
But let's maybe have your attorney think about that till the end of this bill. So if, I hate to just do things and then have to undo them.
I see the logic that you're saying, that it was just a matter that one is, okay. Right?
Okay.
Okay, let's go on to section 32. I believe this is where we left off. 1339-70, again, updates from vocational education. And again, now we're referencing the post-secondary technical institutes throughout. Takes us through section 32. Top of page 15, section 33, amending 1339-71. References, again, the post-secondary technical institutes, which is the same. In section 34, amending 1339-72, updating the language. And that takes us through the technical education, and I will stop there before we go on into sections 35 and into section 36.
Any questions? Seeing none, go ahead.
The last two sections, section 35, is an amendment of 1342-15. This statute requires the teachers and administrators to render their original teaching certificate to the Department of Education if it's been revoked or suspended. We no longer issue hard copy certificates. It's done all electronically. It's online. And so instead, there's no longer any original certificate to surrender because they are able to run it off, but you could run off 20 of them if they wanted. So it's all online. The online system is very clearly indicates that the certificate has been revoked or suspended. The general public is able to look that up and reference that. So our school administrators have that at hand, and it's called Teacher 411, and that it's all online and it's all available. And finally, Section 36, this statute cross-references ARSD 2416-09. This rule's been transferred, and this was a transfer that was done some years ago when we did a cleanup of rules. And so all of 2416-09 has been repealed, and so this is just referencing the appropriate rule that was no longer in place. And what we did with that this time is we made it generic so that when those rules are changed, we don't have to come back to you again and give this specific rule reference. So with that, Mr. Chairman, those are, I would stand by for questions on 1006.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Any quick questions? Go ahead,
Chairman.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Schopp, as Secretary of the Department of Education, would you educate me on Section 6, which is on page 3? And this talks about joint school districts, and it indicates, now I realize this is existing language that's in the existing law, but we're talking about Board of County Commissioners apparently acting like a school board. Is that what happens in joint districts? We don't
That's
have a separate school board like we normally do, but county commissioners take on that responsibility
just let
too.
Us read it here just real quick. Tammy's going to help me out with this.
I'm sorry. I realize this is not in material.
We're just reading through
it.
I believe it has to do with school districts being dissolved, correctly, and the county commissioners would set the boundaries.
You know, I would have to go back and check on this. I guess I've not exactly sure of the intent of this. What I was thinking of quickly as I read through it, when we, wherever a school district is, there's always a county that it's really assigned to in our books and for our purposes and stuff like that. And so it's always the county where the majority of the children reside. I don't know that this is necessarily saying that they have jurisdiction as in being the school board and stuff. I think it's more of, that's just really the county of record of residence for that school district. But I am not 100% sure. I would need to go and double check.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I appreciate those comments, and I realize this is not new material, but maybe somebody from your department
could
give me a phone call or an email or something and just educate me a little bit. I wasn't aware of
that. We'll educate ourselves as well.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Perry.
Mr. Chairman, not a question so much as a comment. I want to go back to Representative Hunt's question on page 12, the duplication of programs. There may well be good reason why you would have a duplicated program, and I wouldn't want the language to come back to restrict that. For instance, since these are institutions that serve geographical areas, you may need welding in Rapid City and you may need welding in Mitchell, even though they may be duplicative programs. So if we're going to play with that language, the prevention of duplication of unwarranted programs or some language which would give some flexibility to meet geographical needs. So just
unwarranted
a comment.
Duplication.
Unwarranted duplication
unwarranted
would be the
duplication.
So it's not, it rolls off the tongue a little better.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. That's what happens when you do it on the fly.
Okay, before we make that amendment, we'll get an official opinion.
Dr. Perry, you're right again. No, we agree. That would be good.
Okay. Well, when we get to that section, we'll get the words exactly right.
Okay.
Or when we get to the point where we're making an amendment.
Okay.
Any other questions on the bill as presented? If not, thank you. There might be questions as we take our action and stuff.
Okay.
So. Okay. Are there other proponents to House Bill 1006? Seeing none, are there opponents to House Bill 1006? Opponents to House Bill 1006? Seeing none, we'll waive rebuttal and go to committee questions. Are there any other questions that we have a burning desire to ask? Seeing none, we'll go to committee action. And thank you, Dr. Schaaf, for a very thorough presentation on that bill. Committee action.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Move do pass.
We have a motion do pass. Second by Perry. Second by Elliott. Motion by Perry, excuse me. Do we want to amend at this time? A substitute motion to amend would probably be in order.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sly.
I move to amend. It's section 26, number 9, and to include the word unwarranted before the word programs. The duplication of unwarranted.
Unwarranted.
Oh, what? Prevent in there also. Okay, so I change that to prevent the duplication of unwarranted programs.
Second. Does that sound good? We have a motion and a second. Motion by Sly, second by Hunt. Would you read back, Claire? Make sure everybody's exactly.
No. It's prevent unwarranted duplication.
Is that what you said?
I did. Thank you.
Yeah, you said it the other way around.
Oh.
That's okay.
Well, it's not okay. We've got to get it exactly right. This may be 100 years before it gets fixed again. We got to.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Repeat your motion.
I will. Unfortunately, it's already recorded how I said it before, correct? So I'm doing it again. Prevent the unwarranted duplication of programs. Is that what the intent is? Okay, thank you.
You got it?
Oh, you want it different.
The prevention of unwarranted program duplication?
No.
Prevention of?
Unwarranted duplication of programs.
Prevention of duplication of unwarranted
programs. No.
No?
No.
It's the unwarranted duplication, not unwarranted programs.
The prevention of unwarranted programs.
Duplication of programs. Is that correct, Bobby?
Prevention of unwarranted duplication of programs.
Where'd that come from? Yes, Representative Lucas.
Thank you. I think it'd be simpler if you look at what the rules are trying to do, and unwarranted means without justification. So if you just would simply say the rules may provide for the following, and then if you go down there to number 9, you just say unwarranted duplication of programs. I think that accomplishes it. It seems like when you have the prevent unwarranted, it's kind of like a double negative in there. But I'm not an expert in this area.
But we do have experts in the room. Or not.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Bobby Rank is legal counsel for the Department of Education. I think you've got your statute says the rules may provide for the following rules. If you have an amendment that says unwarranted duplication of programs, then that's an affirmative. So you've got, it would read, the rules may provide for the unwarranted duplication of programs. And I don't think that's the way that you want it. I think you want it to say the prevention of unwarranted duplication of programs.
All right. Thank you. So the language is, Claire, would you read it one more time?
Prevention of unwarranted duplication of programs.
I believe that is correct. There'll be several other chances to fix this. We screw it up, but we want to get it right. I like clean bills coming out of committees that we don't have to worry about trying to explain this on the House floor. So we have a substitute motion to amend, and this would be a voice vote. Everybody understand what the amendment is? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Bill is so amended. Takes us... well, no, we don't have a motion.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Move do pass on 1006 as amended.
Thank you. Representative Hunt moves do pass as amended. Second by Venner. Representative Venner, comments on your motion?
I think we've gone through it thoroughly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments? Seeing none, the motion is do pass as amended. This is a roll call vote. I would ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Perry?
Aye.
Schaefer?
Aye.
Strickers?
Aye.
Tolson?
Aye.
Vanneman? Venner?
Aye.
Hager?
Aye.
Elliott?
Aye.
Jones?
Aye.
Killer?
Aye.
Lucas?
Aye.
Sly?
Aye.
And Bruner?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Motion carried, yes. It's been amended. I don't think we can do that, can we? Yeah, once a bill's been amended, I don't think we can do that. It's a nice try, though. Good thought.
I definitely didn't want to
turn that. Oh, really? I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. I think assigning this bill to Representative Perry would probably be a good move. You can explain it. Section by section on the House floor.
If you'd like to stay there, okay.
Motion carried. House Bill 1006 is sent out with a due pass recommendation as amended. That takes us to House Bill 1007. Are there proponents to House Bill 1007?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Melody Schopp, Department of Education. Excuse me. Again, I'm going to give you a little cheat sheet to help you out with this one as well. While we're doing this, I do want to give credit to Dr. Pogany, who was very instrumental in the initial work with this. He was still at the department, and he really helped us as we were facilitating and coordinating this work to help get input from the field as well. So, thank you. You know, it was good for us to do also as an agency. It's one of those things you start reading through statute and your head kind of tilts to the side and you go, really? So it was good because we read through the entire, you know, we had staff who read through each one and read through more than once. So it's really made us become more aware of what's in place and what's not. So it's a good thing to do frequently. Not that everybody sits up at night and reads through statute, but we actually did.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Some people actually enjoy that. wait till everybody's got it. So again, I'm going to do the same thing. So if you'll allow me that, we'll look at the statute and go section by section. Some of them are quite obvious and simple, and some of them may warrant some questions, so I'll make sure I give you appropriate time. And this is a repeal, so I'm sorry, I'm going to back up. So House Bill 1007 is an act to repeal certain outdated and obsolete statutes regarding the Department of Education. So these are all repeals, and there's no amendments within these as well. Section 1 repeals 13-3-24. This requires reports from county auditors and the apportionment of school funds. The department has not collected this report. The information is not used in a meaningful way, and thus it's unnecessary paperwork.
Question, yes. Representative Tolson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if that possibly information is not used in a meaningful way. Could the people in the county or the county commissioners or someone that is looking at taxation and so forth, would it help them or not? Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Member Tammy Darnell, and actually this information is all available on the DOE website. We collect that from the schools through our annual financial reports and report it out there. So it is available. But we don't have to collect it. This is saying collect it from the county auditors, and they have to keep that. It's not information that is even collected from them. It's collected from the schools.
Follow up?
Go ahead.
So each county would, if you went into the auditor of the county, you could find this information.
Under generally accepted accounting principles, they should be keeping it anyway, but they're not. I guess the part of it is that the requiring to make a report to the Secretary of Education, there's nothing that we need from them. So they still, just because they have to follow governmental accounting, they would still have to have a record of all of this stuff.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Section number two, repeals 13-3-85, and what we're proud to say is that the statute is in regard to Project Lead the Way, and this program has been implemented in South Dakota, and thus the statutory language is no longer needed as that we've got this implemented in many of our schools and it's well underway. So you'll see that it required us to review Project Lead the Way. We reviewed it, and we did implement this, and we were very proud to say that this is in place in many of our school districts.
Because somebody's going to ask, not on this committee, but somewhere, somebody's going to ask, what is Project Lead the Way?
Mr. Chairman, Project Lead the Way is curriculum that's very specific to what I would call problem-based applications in the areas of STEM, so in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And it's used in a lot of our school districts to provide curriculum, and we're finding that we're able to use it for a graduation requirement. Particularly in the areas of perhaps either biology or chemistry, and it depends on how the Project Lead the Way curriculum is set up. It's really been effective in many of our school districts. It really gives that more of that hands-on way of learning the sciences and the maths integrated.
Thank you.
Yep. Section number three, repeals 13-386. Again, the statute references a clearinghouse for youth internships and other experiences outside the classroom. This clearinghouse was established via SD My Life, which I know we've talked about extensively, and the Department of Labor website. So we have completed this work, and it's currently in place in school districts across the state. Section number four, repeals, and I'm now on page two, repeals 13-3-87. It called for the department to establish a framework for high schools to meet the demands of the 21st century. And that was a reference previously to the High School 2025 initiative. While this initiative is done, much of that work, we're proud to say, has become part of the SD My Life, has become part of the career clusters that we talked about previously. So we've implemented in probably more of a systemic way than simply a framework. And so this really charged us to go forward. And as a result, we have all these pieces implemented and integrated into a strong system of SD My Life and career clusters, which we use across our school districts. Section 5 is, again, a repeal of the statute calling for a framework for entrepreneurship. That framework has been established. We have guidelines and books that we have distributed to school districts and training that we're currently carrying on that help our school school districts to carry out the graduation requirement for entrepreneurship. This is in place and happening across our school districts. So once again, we have completed that work and we've developed that framework. Section number 6 repeals 1313-10-6. This statute provides funding based on an increase in teachers' salaries, and 1313-10-7 required the promulgation of rules. That program was no longer funded, and that was during the school year of 2009. It set apart, it set forward certain requirements the school district needed to do to be able to get the increase in the funding, which at that time was $22.64. And so the each district had to verify that they were meeting those certain requirements, and as a result, that statute was is no longer in place from 2009.
Yes, Representative Lucas, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Dr. Schopp, was there, I think Sioux Falls School District had a lawsuit regarding how that money was to be distributed, whether or not they actually had given the adequate increase if they'd met, you know, if they had received an increase of funds, the way I understand it, then they were supposed to increase salaries proportionally. Is that still pending?
Mr. Chairman, I am not aware of where that's in the school district.
No? Okay.
Okay, section number 7. Same thing, it refers to the previous section, section 6. Section 8, and I am going to have Tammy talk about this. This statute references impact aid. Remember, we talked about the federal citation was incorrect, which we amended in the previous. And so throughout section 9, 10, 11, and 12. Oh, no, I'm just going to stop in section 8. Excuse me. We'll just stop at section 8, which is repealed based on the federal aid and impact aid citation. So do you have any questions on that? And is that with that extra sheet?
Questions? Guess not.
Okay, she explained it really well the time before, correct? Okay, the statutes in sections 9, 10, 11, and 12, so it's a repeal of 13-1366, 13-1367, 13-1369, and 13-1370. These statutes reference the transition to the current funding formula. So these statutes are no longer needed, as these statutes are now outdated. And this will take you through page 6, to the bottom of page 6. So these are changes that we've had in the current way that we currently fund in the funding formula. Do you have questions on that?
Representative Tolson, question.
Back to impact aid. Yeah, you did it. You explained that very well. When they get impact aid in lieu of the local taxes, is that amount usually higher than the local taxes?
I would say probably usually, but it would depend on the area and stuff. I can't say 100% all the time, but generally it is.
Erin, I'm going to also jump in. Remember, those dollars do not flow through the Department of Education. They go directly to the school district. On page 7, section 13 and section 14 repeals 13, 16, 30, and 31. And these sections relate to public law 103 through 382, Title 8. These statutes are regarding the general fund balance cap that have been repealed. These statutes are no longer necessary as a result of that. So that would be, again, on page 7, section 13 and section 14. Section 15 in the middle of page 7 repeals 1334. The statute provided a room and board allowance for students who board away from home. It was last updated in 1969, so you know when the reference of that was. We are, to our knowledge, this is no longer utilized. Again, it would not prevent a district from doing this should they want to do it on their own. But you see that previously they were entitled to that transportation allowance if they were boarding, which was a common practice years ago where families would move into town during the wintertime and they would be reimbursed for room and board allowances. And so we are repealing that section as well. And we did do some checking on that, by the way, to see if that was currently, if there was any practice of that. We found none that was happening in our school districts. Okay, now I'm going to be very careful on the next two sections and explain this because I don't want you to think we're taking anything away from school districts. So let me explain and you can ask questions. Section 16 and 17 repeals 1334, 16.2, and 16.3. And so we've tried to clearly explain what our intent is, and then we'll take questions after that. Interestingly enough, there's several sections or statutes that relate to the loaning of textbooks. And two of them that you'll see, the two that we are repealing, 16.2 and 16.3, were ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court in 1985. And in 1986, the Constitution was amended in 87. Then they passed 1334-32, which requires the loaning of nonsectarian textbooks, and it was intended to replace these two. And for whatever reason, these two were not outright repealed. So we've got three statutes in the book. There was clearly an intention by the legislature at that time to replace those statutes, and that was not done. And so we find in the department that a lot of times there is confusion by school districts, that they remain on the books. It causes confusion. So we're not repealing, I want to make that very clear, we're not repealing the authority to loan textbooks. It's simply asking for two inactive statutes to be taken off, and the active provision is left on the books to clear up that confusion. And I do have that if you want. Again, the statute that's currently in place is 1334-23, which references very clearly the loan of textbooks. And I'm just going to read the first part of that to assure you that it's still there. Each public school board shall loan without charge to all persons ages 5 through 19 who are either enrolled in a public school or a school supervised in accordance to 13.4 or engaged in a course of instruction pursuant to 1327-3 in the school district under the board's jurisdiction. So, again, it goes on. So there's a statute still in place. We are trying to clarify, clean up the language, get rid of conflicting statutes, and so we want to make it very clear that we're not taking any authority away. It's simply something that we never understood why there was three conflicting statutes that were currently in place.
Yes, question, Representative Enner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Schaap,
yes,
sometimes you talk too fast for me.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Who are we loaning the textbooks to?
Mr. Chairman, many times these are loaned to private schools, homeschool students, other non-public school districts.
Private schools and homeschools, is there any category that does not apply here or that we would not or could not loan to?
Mr. Chairman, no, there would not be.
Thank you, Dr. Schaap.
When you, I might add, whenever you see 1327, it always has to do with homeschool. That's the homeschool section of law. Thank you. Go ahead.
Any other questions? I just want to make sure that that's clear before, because we do not want any confusion on what we are attempting to do there.
I think we're good.
Good. Section 18 repeals 1342-15.1. Again, this references our current online teaching certificates. The statute requires a teacher to surrender a teaching certificate or to be penalized if they do not do so. Again, teaching certificates now issued electronically. They're all online for the public, and the statute's not necessary.
Now you just hit the delete button, is that?
Yeah, basically. It's kind of a scary thing, isn't it?
Mean, I know. I'm sorry.
Okay, Section 19, 20, and 21. These statutes established an advisory council for the certification of teachers. And again, it references the members of those committees, describes the function of that council. And this council has not been active for several years, and we were charged this year with making sure that we eliminated and cleaned up any councils or any statutory references to any councils that were not actively engaged. And so this is part of the review that we've done and wanted to make sure that those statutes are no longer in place for a council that's no longer active.
Question, Representative Perry. Miller.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Why did this council become inactive?
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Perry, or Representative Perry, I do not know why it's not been in place or why it's not been used over the last few years. In the time that I've been with the department, I don't believe this council has been referenced at that point in time. So that is... And I would, you know, one additional thing that I'd like to reference on this, that much of the work that we do has been specific to working together with the Education Discipline Councils and the South Dakota SDACTE, where those two groups advise us on many of the things in the preparation programs. So much of our work has been done in collaboration with the higher education institutes and working through any of the changes we've made to any rules and specifics we've made in the changes to the teacher preparation programs.
Representative Miller, you had a question?
Thank you. That pretty much took care of it. I was going to ask what was the advisory council and what was it for and why wasn't it used and blah, blah, blah.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Tolson.
Well, who does this then? It says certification of teachers. There will be an advisory board. Who does that now?
Mr. Chairman, many times if there have been changes to any sort of rules that specific groups, and let me give you an example. Number one, all and any changes to rules are taken before the Board of Education. So the Board of Education promulgates any rules if we have any changes to whatever is done. If we've done any specific changes, and I'll give you a couple examples, we created an endorsement, a reading endorsement. So reading teachers and the reading preparation programs got together and created those specific rules. Another change that was made over the last couple years, there was an endorsement for science and math, and it was very specific to a science and math preparation. So we worked together with the Preparing Institutes from that group, as well as science and math teachers for that specific. So what we found is that when we've been doing changes specific to programs, specific things, we've worked with those groups. Another example would be we made a change to an endorsement for the preparation of the blind and visually impaired endorsement. And so, again, worked with those group of educators who are very specific to that work, found out what they needed. So we've gone instead specific to the individuals who are involved in that work rather than a general council so that they have, you know, the more hands-on work with that very specifically. So I can think of at least four or five different groups over the last few years who have acted more specifically on what the rules are than a general council.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Section 22 repeals 1343.3. That was tied to 1343.3. It required health certificates for school district employees. And in 2007, 1343.3 was repealed. And so now this section was sort of sitting out there on its own. And it had nothing to reference to. So there was no longer a certificate of health required. That was a joint repeal back in 2007 between the Department of Health and Department of Education. So this statute should have been cleaned up at that point in time, and that was not done. Section 23 repeals 1343.57. This statute required school districts to submit an annual report on regarding its use of long-term substitute teachers. This report, although we've been collecting it over the last few years, ever since that was put in place, nobody ever asked us for that information. And so although the department's been doing it as we were required, it's a report that's done in our personal record form system. Never once have we ever used that data to inform the legislature or to inform anybody about the information that came from that. So it seemed like an unnecessary thing for us to continue to do if we weren't using the information for any other purpose than reporting it in the system.
Representative Perry, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you collect information in the department on people who are teaching but do not have certification in the subject area in which they're teaching?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Perry, a few years ago when the No Child Left Behind Act came in, we were required, and it's reported out by school district, the percentage of teachers who are not what they call highly qualified. And the highly qualified regulations require that teachers must be teaching in the area in which they are, or must be certified in the area in which they are teaching. So we have that down to the individual. When personnel record forms are filled out by the district, they indicate what the teacher's teaching in. If there is a mismatch, they are flagged, and they are not able to sign off on the personal record form system until they indicate to us how they intend to get that teacher appropriately certified and are put on a plan of intent. So we do have catches in place for that.
Representative Lucas, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this doesn't exactly apply 100% here, but they can take the praxis exam and become certified, and then are they considered highly qualified? And then, if I, you know, this may be ruled out of order, but then can they become certified in math and science and be eligible then for the bonus the governor's proposing?
Mr. Chairman.
Without having a fully certified in math or science?
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
According to the current certification rules, if you have an endorsement, and an endorsement is specific to either having the coursework that allows you to earn that, or if they have taken the praxis exam, which indicates that they have the content knowledge that's required for that purpose, that would make them eligible, number one. But remember, they'd have to be teaching 50% of their time. So it's not a matter of just earning the certificate or earning the endorsement. You have to be teaching within that area as well.
Thank you for the
light. No problem. Other questions?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Seeing none, go ahead. Oh, Representative Hunt, I'm sorry.
Dr. Schopp, with regards to Section 23, you're taking away the authority of the South Dakota Board of Education to promulgate rules under that section. Have you followed through and then looked at the rules that have been promulgated and intend to get rid of those rules so that people in the field won't see those rules and be misled?
It's Mr. Chairman, the rules that are very specific to this, there is a general rule that requires that all information is submitted to the Department of Education by the October 15th date, which includes all of our personal record form information. And so these rules, although it was not specific to this information itself, I believe that that was within the general of any of the requirements that are required by the legislature underneath administrative rules would be subject to this. So there are no specific rules for this. It's all underneath that heading of all the things that we are required, that the districts are required to submit to us based on administrative rule. So I think I talked my way around that, but yes.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
So there were never any rules promulgated under this section that we're repealing?
Not specific to this. It's all within that general heading of by October 15th, she'll submit all required information, and I can't think of that specific statute. So any of those fall into that, if any required. It's 13.3 something.
That's the one we just did in the other
bill. It's the one we just did in the other bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And the final section, Section 24, 13.4358, this statute required that teachers received additional compensation if they were teaching courses over the DDN. So think about 10 years ago when we had the DDN at that point in time. Teachers were typically, may have been teaching a course to a number of other students, and now they are doing, but number one, most of the DDN teaching that's being done formally is being done through the e-learning center, and those teachers are under contract through Northern University. So that compensation is part of their general contract. If a school district wishes to compensate teachers more for providing their course for another school district, those are typically internal agreements that are done between two school districts. And so this is not necessarily always in practice, but there's other ways in which districts are handling that. So we just see that that is not something that we are, number one, we're not overseeing that practice if necessary. And then secondly, it may have been necessary at that point in time, but it's now happening on its own without the oversight of the Department of Education.
Questions?
Is that going to be, thank you, Mr. Chairman, is that going to be controversial on the, as far as, are, It doesn't matter if it is, but they, right now it says they shall receive additional compensation. So you're saying that they won't now?
Mr. Chairman, it still allows them that if a school district currently has that practice in place, that they would receive additional compensation. But it does not appear that this is something that we would be, I don't think we're taking that away, anything that the school district may want to do. At that point in time, there was just that requirement that they were paid extra. So I'm not sure that that is a concern. It's just that we have never, number one, tracked to assure that that is happening within the school districts. And secondly, because that's, you know, the DDN, and it's not just the DDN. In fact, that terminology, I think that when we thought about the DDN, we were thinking of the two-way video audio type of things that were happening. And now a lot of courses are being done online asynchronously. And those are happening outside of school. They're happening at the same time as school. So it just seemed like there was, it's become so much a part of what the school system is that there's no additional compensation because some courses are taught that way.
Thank you. Other questions? I don't see any. You have a question, Representative Jones?
Yes. If you
go ahead,
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Schaap, on section 9, 10, 11, and 12, we went over that very quickly, and because it's dealing with monies, I need more help on this. That says your basic statement was these statutes reference transition to the current funding formula. I want to make sure we're not doing something with monies that I don't understand.
And Tammy will go through these. We can talk about them.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Members of the committee, really what this is these statutes are really no longer needed. It's when we switch from the old funding formula, the categorical aid expenditure-driven formula, to our current funding formula based on a per-student allocation. So in that year, and this is before my time, but remembering back, there's like kind of like half a year where we did it one way, half a year that we did it the other way. And so this was that transition piece that was in place, and it just was never repealed. But it's not in effect anymore. Nothing happens with it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? Well, you can come back. We'll go through the process here. If you have other questions, we'll come back. Are there other proponents to House Bill 1007? Seeing none, are there opponents to House Bill 1007? Seeing none, we'll waive rebuttal and go right to committee questions if there are any more. Any more questions? Seeing none, we'll go to discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hunt.
Move do pass on 1007.
We have a motion do pass by Hunt on House Bill 1007. Is there a second? Second by Miller. Comments on your motion?
No, it's a repealer, and it's always nice to see laws being repealed, right?
Absolutely. Other comments? Representative Killer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, you know, something that I was looking at and thinking about when we were going over this was Section 18, the one that repealed the teaching certificates and, you know, the whole issue of, you know, I think institutional change. You know, well, that applies to this legislature, and what does that mean? Not only like in like 5 years or 10 years in terms of the savings, but the actual, what does that look like? And you know, can that be manipulated or can it be tweaked with? Or because I was just thinking about the nature of, you know, my iPod and how much I lose, how many times I lose music, and how many times I lose files on my computers and that kind of stuff. And just really seeing that, you know, I just want to go on record and saying that. You know, just making sure that, you know, I guess as an institution is that we don't stray too much away from, you know, having books and papers and documentation and stuff like that, because, you know, it's something that, you know, I think as we expand into more and more technology, it's kind of like just catch-22 system and just, because, teaching certificates are something that, are something to be cherished and have something on file, but the more and more that we move online is that, do we take that from the teacher? Do we take that out of it? But I just want to go on record and say that and just, but it is a good bill, and I appreciate the agency's cleanup and all that, but, just wanted to throw that out there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Other comments? Seeing none, I guess I'll just make a final comment. We've done good work, and I think there's probably a few more things out there that, in subsequent years can be repealed, and it's always good to clear out, make room for new ones. So with that, the motion is due pass, and I would ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Perry?
Aye.
Schaefer?
Aye.
Strickers?
Aye.
Tolson?
Aye.
Vanneman? Vinner?
Aye.
Hager?
Aye.
Elliott?
Aye.
Jones?
Aye.
Killer?
Aye.
Lucas?
Aye.
Sly?
Aye.
And Bruner?
Aye. Motion carried unanimously. I don't think we really want this on consent. There's some issues in here. I know that somebody's going to bring questions up and we'll want to answer. So, I'll just take the bill myself because I had some concerns initially, and I've had them answered well, so I'm good with that. With that, is there anything else that needs to come before this committee? We will, I assume, by our next meeting time, have 1,005 whatever amendments we need to fix that, and we'll appear below the line, I suppose, but we'll go from there. Anything else needs to come before this committee? Seeing nothing, I would entertain a motion to adjourn. Representative Hunt moves to adjourn, second by Miller. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. We are adjourned.